Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I find it amazing that stuff that happened 50 years ago, not only am I learning new things about it all the time, but when you listen to it, so much of it sounds fresh, sounds new. And when you think about the recording equipment used 50 years ago and the recording equipment now, I mean, I know now we have amazing digital mastering, and back then we had just tape and razor blades and scotch tape putting it all together. And yet, I'll be honest with you, I think some of the old stuff really sounds as good as the stuff today. And a guy who would know all about that is Alan Parsons. Alan Parsons Project is here right now joining us, along with Martin Untroib, who is not only one of our WCBS newsroom employees, but happens to be probably the biggest Alan Parsons Project fan I know.
Yes, totally.
He had to sit in.
First album I ever bought, I actually brought it with me, was Turn of a Friendly Card.
Oh, wow.
That's when I was living in Argentina. I was 8 years old, and my cousin took me to a record store, and he said, this is the album that you have to get. And it's the first one I ever bought for myself, and to this day I have it, along with everything else you've recorded, and it sounds as amazing today as it did back then. So it's an honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
We're fans.
Totally.
Games People Play is on that album, right? I'm looking at you. Like, I should look at Alan Parsons.
Actually, there were two hits on that album, Games People Play and Time.
And those are two of the first songs I played on the radio when I was a baby disc jockey, so that means a lot to me, too. I've said your name about 1,000 times. It's great to finally see you. You're going to be at Town Hall, and you're going to be playing some of your newer stuff, I imagine, and maybe some of the old stuff too.
Definitely a lot of old stuff, and just two or three new songs from the latest album,
which we like. Martin and I were listening to it.
Love it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. You got Lou Gramm on one of the cuts.
We've got Lou Gramm singing one of the songs. Yes, we've got Jason Mraz, who is a different generation, of course, but he's a great singer, and also Steve Hackett playing a really great series of guitar parts on the opening track.
And it's such today. It's kind of like when you were recording the Beatles. They were all in different rooms back then. And now you're able to do the same thing today without even having to be with Lou Gramm in the studio. Is that right?
Yes, incredibly. I've never met him face to face. We just did it over the internet, yeah. Sometimes you win.
Sometimes you lose. So then how'd you make it happen?
It's a program, an internet program called Source Connect, and basically he hears the track at his end, does all the singing over there, and then the files get sent over to wherever I am.
And it sounds okay?
Oh, it sounds
goes through
fine.
The interweb thing?
It's totally, the spec is as good as it would be if he was in the same room.
Because
while we're actually listening, while he's actually performing it, it's a little closer to kind of MP3 quality, but... But it is being recorded in high definition at the place where he's recorded.
Sometimes. But then you work your magic on it.
Well, we talk and we.
Well, I imagine you had your own processing.
We had several. Yeah, we did several takes and then choosing the best from each one and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, Martin and I were talking about the fact that you actually teach. You give lessons and classes on how to reconstruct, I guess deconstruct and reconstruct music, and with the various tracks and adding surround. You won a Grammy for all your work with
I
surround
did. First
sound.
Grammy this year, yes.
Congratulations.
I'm wearing a watch to prove it.
Oh, let me see that. Is that a Grammy watch? Hold on.
It is. You can look at the... You need good reading skills to be able to see what it says on the back.
On the back?
Yeah.
Oh, check it out.
It's funny that you mentioned, you know, then he gets to do his magic. And magic is the theme of the album. I mean, every concept album.
I choose my words carefully, Martin. I knew what I was saying.
I also had a hit single with a band called Pilot with a song called Magic.
Magic. Alan Parsons is like, I'm never coming here again. If this guy's going to sing, I'm leaving right now.
No. It's very interesting that you go back in this album, you go back to your roots of the concept, but you're going back to something that has been, from what I understand, you've been fascinated by magic all your life.
Yes, I have a huge collection of magic tricks. No, yes, magic is a passion of mine. Also, my friends are magicians, and I love going to the famous Magic Castle in Hollywood, where if you haven't ever been, it's a magical place. Magical.
Can you saw somebody in half? Because we have a couple people out there we were looking at.
I used to have an illusion in my collection called the Zigzag Girl. The girl gets into a cabinet and then her middle section is completely moved to the side.
Now, a magician never reveals his secrets.
Absolutely.
That's the title of your album. And at the same time, you're teaching to a whole new generation your secrets about audio recording.
Yeah, I mean, it's an extension of a video series and a book I did a couple of years ago called The Art and Science of Sound Recording. We hold these masterclasses sort of in conjunction with that video and book.
So we can come to your place.
You can, yeah.
And we can pay, which is not a lot of money.
You don't come for free, but...
No, but it's like $850 or $900, something like that.
Something like that.
That's not bad. I mean, it's actually quite good. Spend all day, you show us your tricks... We have a little lunch. We schmooze.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
There's one coming up in October. So if anybody's interested in coming from New York to the West Coast, it'll be at my place in California. So it's on the website, alanparsons.com.
And beautiful new studios, right? These are the new studios
you built? It's a brand new studio, yes, built from scratch. And I'm very pleased with it.
You're somebody who came up in, as we said, the analog age, and you've completely embraced digital. What sounds better?
I think my best work has been done on analog consoles, and I have an analog console in the new studio. But the medium, the recording medium, hard disk recording, Pro Tools, that's an enormous time saver, and it gets better all the time sonically.
Yeah, Martin was pointing out about on Dark Side of the Moon
with money at the beginning.
Well, yeah, I mean. If hard disk recording had existed back in 1972 when we made the album, that loop of sounds as the intro for Money would have taken about 10 minutes. But as it is, it took a whole day, literally cutting little pieces of tape together. We actually had to measure the exact length of each sound with a ruler,
so because
otherwise
was it?
It was not rhythmic. You know, it had to be exactly. 5 inches and 3/8 or something, you know, for each sound.
So it's like, I don't know, Pro Tools is cheating, isn't it?
A little bit. I mean, most people will record, a set of backing vocals on chorus one and then literally cut and paste it or copy and paste it into chorus two because you can.
Right. Mm.
But in the old days, that would have been a lengthy process of editing and re-editing.
And one of the things I learned about you, and I'm not sure that everything I've learned is true, so you can tell me. Oh, first of all, I had no idea you were on the roof of Abbey Road for the great
roof of Apple. It was Apple, not Abbey Road.
Oh, it was Apple, sorry.
Yeah.
The Apple rooftop. That's right. There you are in an orange shirt and tie. Because everybody yes. had to wear ties back then.
Yeah, that was the brief, you know.
But
yeah.
I also read that for Dark Side of the Moon, when there's one of the many... segments where people are talking in the background, you have to listen very carefully to hear what they're saying.
I certainly wasn't right.
That you auditioned various people for that, both in studio and out, and among them were Paul and Linda McCartney. Is that
true?
Yeah,
that's true. Like me, who also did the answers to these questions that they put out on a set of cards, Paul's, Linda's, and mine answers were just very dull and very 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 boring. But the guy
that's hard to imagine.
But the guy that shone was this janitor guy, the Irish janitor, Jerry Driscoll. And he's all over it, you know. He's the guy who says, there is no dark side in the moon, really. You know?
There is no dark side in the moon, really. Matter of fact, it's all dark.
And whose laugh is that?
The laugh is a tech that worked for the Floyd called Peter Watts. And I don't know. They just somehow grabbed that laughter on tape at some point, and they just said, we want to use that on the album.
I love how you talk about this. It's so matter of fact. Like it's not like it's not a big deal that you were 19 years old working on Abbey Road, or I guess 18 working on Let It Be, or that you produced Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, I didn't produce it. If I had produced it, I'd be talking to you from my private island in the Caribbean.
You engineered it.
I engineered it.
Right, yeah. Right.
And that means that I just got paid a salary, about £35 a week.
How did you get hired at EMI?
I wrote to the manager at a good time. He wanted to fire two other guys. And I was already associated with Abbey Road through another department in West London called Tape Records, where we were making albums on reel-to-reel tape, you know, commercially available. There were these little 3-inch plastic spools with albums on them.
And that's how we would listen to music back in those days.
Well, you had the choice of vinyl or these little tapes. So I'm talking before, I mean, I'm sounding like I'm really old here.
Well, with you.
This is before cassettes and 8-tracks. You know,
the beauty of it is we have kids who are in their teens and who love listening to vinyl and actually like listening to music like your music in the 70s, the 60s, and that it's still relevant and
well, vinyl is undergoing a renaissance, and that can only be a good thing because it means people are resisting the awful sound of MP3 on awful little earbuds on awful sounding phones. You know, it's encouraging, I think, that vinyl's making a comeback.
I got to ask you a question because Martin and I were just talking about this before you came in. So yesterday I was listening to Abbey Road. I was listening to the CD. They have it on vinyl also, but I put the CD on, and it's the most annoying damn thing where some of those songs come together. Golden Slumbers, Me, Mr. Mustard. I forget about the order. You would know the exact order. But on the CD, as opposed to the vinyl, there's just a tiny pause in between each track. I guess the CD needs to do that to identify one track from another. I'm not even talking about on shuffle. I'm talking about in order. It stops and breaks the sound and the transition from one song to the next. What's that all about?
I think that must be a function of your CD player because I've never heard that before.
Really?
Yeah.
I paid a lot of money for that damn CD player.
If you just put it into play, it should be continuous. But if you were access a particular song by, you know, pressing track 3 or track 4 or whatever,
okay,
then you might get a little snippet of the previous track or a little gap.
So that shouldn't be?
No, it shouldn't be.
All right. Going to go back there to Nerdy McNerdstein, who sold me that CD player, and get a new one. But CD is okay. You're fine with CD. You're fine with vinyl.
I'm okay with CD. I'm becoming more into vinyl because there's new technologies for vinyl as well. You can master at half speed. You know, instead of the cutting turntable running at 33 RPM, it runs at half that, you know, 15 and 2/3 or whatever it is. And
so when you play it back, it sounds better?
That gives you a sonic advantage doing it that way.
Is that what they're doing? Because it does sound better now. My daughter bought some new thick vinyl. It's expensive. It's like $30 for a record. But it sounds phenomenal. I can hear the difference.
Yeah, and probably less prone to crackles and pops as well. In the heavier,
we're
heavier
also taking vinyl. Better care of it than we were kids, right? Just throwing it in the sleeve.
Yeah.
All right. So, Martin, you have the floor. If you had one question to ask Alan Parsons,
The usual one question is, what was it like to work with Pink Floyd? Which is a really rather dull question.
It sounds like you wanted us to ask that question. now that you've opened the door.
You're serious. You really want, want me to ask
that? Well, I mean, okay. If you want a more refined question, let's see. I'll put on my refined attitude.
The refined question that I would have is one of the albums that, for me, along with Turn of the Friendly Card, because it's the first one I bought that I like, but the one that I feel that it's underrated in many ways is the first one.
Yeah.
Tales of
Mystery and Imagination.
Mystery and Imagination. Something about Edgar Allan Poe. His poems.
It was based on his stories and poems, yes.
Not exactly the theme that someone would say, I'm going to put out an album, that's going to be the first thing I record. How do you come up with that?
The Alan Parsons Project was two guys, myself and the late Eric Wolfson, who was the main songwriter of the project. And he had studied at college the fact that no movie based on an Edgar Allan Poe story had ever lost money. So he thought, ah.
Do you come up with a concept and then write songs around it? Or do you start writing songs and then find like a common theme and you're like, okay, I can put this together and work from that? How does that process work?
In the case of the Poe album, it was easy. We just needed to pick some of our favorite stories. And the Raven was an obvious choice. The Telltale Heart was another favorite. And a poem called "To One in Paradise" that closes it off, but we just went through the various choices of Poe's work and based songs upon what we thought was appropriate.
But you decided you had a lot of success as on the sound end of it, the behind the scenes end, and even though you had an offer to keep working with Pink Floyd, you just said, no, I'm going to go out on my own. I'm an artist. Your parents were musicians. You decided, I'm going to make this happen. Well, you could have been very comfortable and not even had to break a sweat for the rest of your
life.
Well,
I might have still been working for Pink Floyd, pushing buttons for their various activities.
What was it, 15 years that Dark Side of the Moon was in the album charts? That's unbelievable.
I think it's probably longer.
Longer than that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I think it still pops in and out now and again.
So you keep getting checks as these things stay in there.
I wish I was.
No, you said before you got a salary.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Oh man. I got one Beatles question. Okay, two. All right, two. To be honest with you, so you said that Let It Be was an experiment that didn't work.
They wanted to rather than do this sort of laboratory perfection in recording like Sgt. Pepper was, and to a certain extent the White Album as well. They wanted to do a performance album. They would play the song, do vocals live, no overdubs. That was the intention. But there was a film crew there shooting every moment. I think that made them nervous. And when the idea came to go up to the roof and actually perform on a makeshift stage, that's when it all came together. They really were performing,
right,
as if at a live concert. And most of the chosen takes for the album were taken from the rooftop, not from the basement.
And I heard it said that there's two songs on Abbey Road that you really liked, and they're so diverse, so different. Maxwell Silverhammer and Golden Slumbers. Those songs?
Golden Slumbers is kind of part of that long medley, which I think was a brilliant piece of work. Maxwell, yeah, I kind of like it. John Lennon was said to say he didn't want it on the album or he didn't like it, but I was very impressed, particularly with the Moog solo that Paul played on it, which was done on the original Moog synthesizer. There was this ribbon of material, just like a sort of piece of velvet a strip of velvet, and he played the solo by moving his finger up and down that piece of velvet, and that meant he had to find the pitch of each note by just feeling it with this rhythm.
So
he has a great ear, Paul McCartney.
Didn't seem like a Paul song, did it?
Oh, I think it is a Paul song.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, it's not very rocky. It's very very poppy. But I think it's got Paul written all over it.
What about Golden Slumbers? Talk to you.
Oh yeah, a great song. I mean, it's I always think of it as being titled "You Never Give Me Your Money" rather than being called Golden Slumbers, because that's the first line of the song, and that reprises at the end. So no, but the whole piece, the long one as we called it, the medley, I think it was incredibly well conceived, well constructed, and beautifully performed, and great recording.
And your job was to make the drums sound right?
I was just junior, I was a tape operator, literally just pressing play, pressing record, rewinding.
Okay.
Hopefully pressing record at the right time, because if you pressed record at the wrong time or in the wrong place on the tape, that was it. It's gone, you know.
It's gone, and you're gone too,
On modern recording, there is this wonderful thing called the undo button.
Oh, yeah.
But there was no undo button in the 70s.
Was George Martin really the maestro?
I give him a lot of credit for being the catalyst to make the Beatles records happen. I mean, I've said it a lot. The my period with the Beatles on the was in the second half of the making of Abbey Road, and George was there every day. But individual Beatles would come in just on their own. It became less of a band thing. It became a series of recordings by one Beatle at a time, as it were.
Legends, though. By then, complete legends. You must have been absolutely shaking when you met them. I would have been.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. But, I got used to it. And I went on to work with Paul on his solo stuff in later years. But, yes, it was intimidating, to say the least, if you're in a room with all four Beatles and George Martin and Yoko Ono and Linda Eastman. Yeah, intimidating.
And you were 18, 19 years old.
Yeah, I was 19.
Jeez. Getting my head around
actually,
that.
I tell a lie. I just turned 20 because the rooftop session just had its 50th anniversary, and it was January. So the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road is coming up in a couple of weeks.
That's right. Yeah.
It was released in the UK a couple of weeks earlier, so it's coming right up in the UK, and it's going to be soon here in the States.
Well, we've skimmed the surface. We could probably talk to you for two more hours. I think of The Air That I Breathe, which was when it just speaks to me, and I almost get emotional when I hear that song. Al Stewart's music has the same impact on me, and you're the guy behind all of that. And wow, what a pleasure to talk to you. Hey, Alan Parsons, before you run,
one last question that I'm going to ask since tomorrow.
Do I support Brexit?
No. This is about, you talked about being intimidated as a young person with the Beatles. But you, I get the sense that you're more comfortable behind the scenes and sort of like controlling all the elements of the music.
Yeah, my upbringing was behind the scenes, behind on the other side of the glass to the performers. But since starting to play live, I've become much more comfortable, in front of the microphone, in front of the audience, talking to the audience. And singing, even I never thought I would be. I never thought I would sing on live stage, but here I am. I'm doing it and enjoying every second of it.
And we can expect more albums in the future. Not another 15-year wait for another album.
I'm sorry it took so long for this one. Yes, but I've got I've got my own studio, so I need to use it and I need to pay for it.
It's called The Secret. That's the new album. And Martin, maybe we'll fly out to Santa Barbara.
We need to request time off in October.
Yeah, seriously. Can I borrow some money?
Sure.
Fantastic. Thank you guys for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Most welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.